Yua Hamasaki says she's witty, sassy, and gay. But don't worry, she's also cray-cray. And just to prove she's indeed cray-cray, she's on Feast of Fun. Like RuPaul, Yuhua uses the fabulous name her parents gave her as her stage name. But her parents don't know she does drag at all.
Today, Yuwa Hamasaki, a drag queen who has all her teeth, joins us to talk about her wild experience on RuPaul's Drag Race Season 10. Listen as Yuwa takes us back to her roots in China, the Miss Vanjie phenomenon, and the racial tensions between Chicago's The Vixen and New York City's Aquaria.
Plus, all your questions. Yuwa don't want to miss this show. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. The time has come for you to show how fierce and fabulous you are, hunty.
Check out our t-shirts inspired by many great moments in drag in our fashion boutique, feastoffun.com/store.
Our guest today is all the way from Guangdong, China.
Oh my God, yes I am. All the way from China, baby. Here I am.
Is that a big dong, Guangdong?
Well, I don't know, but you want to see my dong?
Sure.
I have a pussy. Please don't look. I have a pussy. I'm a woman.
How do I pronounce your name? Because I notice RuPaul pronounces it one way and you do it another.
Yuhua.
Yuhua.
With an H. Yuhua.
Yuhua Hamasaki.
Yes.
And this is actually the name your parents gave you, just like RuPaul did.
Yes, it was my legal name, because when I started drag, I was just going to the clubs. I didn't think I was going to continue doing drag.
Yeah.
So I just kept that name, Yuhua, because everybody was calling me Yuhua at the time.
And so did you ever feel any pressure to come up with a different name? Or
no, because
no,
it
like,
is...
this is you.
Because it is me. Yeah. You know, I have to love myself, right?
I thought it was a pun at first. I was like, Yuhua, Yuhua. Like, I thought it sounded like a New York person, like calling you a whore.
Calling me a whore? I am a whore. And Jada Sophia on the first episode said, Yuhua, like U-Haul, like the girl that drives your furniture while you're moving.
Did she think you were a lesbian or something?
I don't know. I'm very androgynous.
You just happen to be a beautiful woman.
Yes, I am.
Most of the time.
Yes, I am.
And then, you know, just a mortal among humans on Earth.
Yes, I'm like, what do you call it? Harry Potter.
Oh, really? What's your secret magic power?
I can make men love me, just like I am doing right now to you guys. To
you're very lovable.
I feel it. Yeah.
Do you feel it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's putting in you right now. It's going in you. Feel it?
Spoiler alert.
Yes.
I was so heartbroken because I loved the way you were talking and your personality in the interviews.
Oh, thank you.
And I was like, oh, she's going to be top five easily. And, you know, and when we've seen you in the past,
five, probably.
you really shine as a very intelligent, very funny, very what is it you describe yourself as? Sassy and gay, but don't worry, she's also cray cray.
Yes. And I think that's what most people really are. You know, when you try to be yourself, people think you're crazy, but in fact, you're actually just speaking out the truth.
Amen. Right? And so you got eliminated, and everybody now is going like, as if you were in a terrible car accident. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm fine, girl. People keep asking me, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Are you okay? Are you sad? Anything I can do for you? I'm like, I'm fine, girl. Life goes on. It really does. And, you know, this is just the beginning. I can look at it as a bad thing, like I got eliminated on national television, or I can look at the bright side and say, hey, my success is not determined by my elimination on the show. It is actually by the amount of hard work that I want to put in after the show, knowing that I'm given this amazing opportunity in this day and age.
You forgot to clap while you say that. Because I am not that kind of girl.
Because I am that kind of girl.
Well, and even just getting on the show is winning. I mean,
I think you have
a national, international platform.
Exactly, because out of thousands and thousands of girls, we were the lucky 14 to be chosen.
Yeah. On season 10.
On season
10. Of the X.
Season X. We call ourselves season rated X because we're all just horny men.
Who's the biggest slut on the show?
Not me. I think there's some. There's Calorie.
Yeah.
There's Eureka. There's Mayhem. There's
Eureka's a vacuum cleaner.
Oh, yes, girl. You should see her mouth, girl. You can see what that mouth can do.
She doesn't eat just food.
No, she sucks up everything. Every last drop.
Wow. You know, I like the little Broadway queen.
Blair Sinclair.
Blair Sinclair.
Love her.
She's really cute. She has a howdy doody kind of.
What kind of whore is she?
Yeah. What kind of whore is she?
a very, very subtle young whore, I would say.
Now, your family moved from Guangdong, China when you were 8 years old?
When I was 7 years old.
7 years old.
7 years old. And when we first moved here, I had a culture shock because it was my first time seeing people that were different from me.
Okay.
And when we landed at JFK, that's when it hit me. Oh, we're at a different country. And that was the first time I ever saw snow looking out the window. It was October 1997.
Were you happy when you saw the snow?
I was like, what the fuck is that? What the fuck is that? What's going on?
Because I'm from Puerto Rico, and I always associated snow with Christmas.
Yes.
So when Puerto Ricans see snow for the very first time, we get so excited. We're like, this is magic. This is Santa Claus is about to show up.
What we associate snow is with cold, not Christmas, like bad weather, something bad's coming. Like, that's what we associate snow with, like cold weather.
Oh, death.
Yeah.
Like winter is coming. On,
like winter's coming.
Game
like,
of Thrones.
Yeah, like we have to like go hide or something.
So did your family regret initially the move to New York?
No, not at all, because they moved here for us, you know, for us to have a better life. So I don't think they have any regrets unless they don't really love us.
Right? Well, and your family has been very embracing of your job as a drag queen.
Actually, I'm like, my story is very similar to Kimchi's.
Okay.
They're in denial.
They still don't know?
They don't know?
They kind of know, but they're in denial. I think Kimchi's more severe where they don't know anything.
Right.
But mine knows some stuff, but they just in denial. They don't talk about it.
Is Kimchi, has she come out to her mother yet?
I don't think
girl.
Not
that I'm aware
that
of.
Is outrageous, because it's like she's in the news all the time.
Yeah, but you know, her mother is an immigrant person that I don't think even really speaks English, or she speaks like restaurant English because she works in a Korean restaurant. And so you can kind of like, when you're living in a different country and a different culture, you can only be tuned into the things you want to be tuned into. She probably just watches Korean television and
the different country she lives in is in the suburbs of Chicago.
Well, no, I think her mother's in Michigan too.
Oh, Michigan.
So that's another thing.
Look, her mother's in Michigan?
Yeah. I believe her mother's in Michigan. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But also the thing is, Asian culture is that we're so excluded from everything. Like even when we live in America, there's always Chinatown or Koreatown, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So when we're living in America, we go they go to work and then they come back home and then they watch their soap operas. That's that's Chinese soap operas or Korean soap operas, and then they go to sleep. They don't watch regular TV.
Now, you grew up watching Chinese soap operas.
I did. How did you know?
I read your press release, bitch.
Oh, wow. Oh, yes, I did.
I'm a journalist.
Oh, okay. Yes, I did. I love them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because they're interesting because, you know, I think in the United States, historically, we haven't had, like, a lot of the historical soap operas, but I think we're getting some of them more nowadays. But because the thing, tell the audience what soap operas are like in China.
Very dramatic.
Yeah.
Like telenovelas, like very dramatic. Sometimes it doesn't even make sense, but you find it entertaining because it's so dramatic. Mm-hmm. You know, the costumes are very, very grand. Mm-hmm. The acting is very, very grand, and the whole production value of it is just very, very big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, it's interesting to see because, like, when I stopped in China where I was trying to
watch. Where did you go?
I went to Hong Kong. I spent about 2 weeks there. And we also did a trip to, like, Macau and to Guangzhou.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's where I was born.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great food, I have to say.
Yes.
And so, we were watching these television shows. And, of course, it was in Chinese, so we didn't know what was going on. But we were just like, these people have all the feels.
Yeah. They're like,
all types that inspires your drag?
Yes, I would say so, especially in the ancient soap opera, the way they dress. It's the costumes, it's so beautiful. The colors, like I said, it's very dramatic, very grand, and very glorified version of it.
So how did you get into drag?
How did I dip into drag, or do I get into drag?
How did
you
get into drag, like, in the beginning?
In the beginning? Well, it's a very long story, and I have to tell every time, but growing up, like every LGBT person, you were bullied, you were made fun of, you know, you didn't fit in. So while growing up, I would try to be very hidden, very low profile. So I would try to be like in the corner, not trying to have any fun. So when I started doing drag, that's when I felt like, oh my God, I'm finally feeling expressive. I'm finally having fun. I'm finally grasping back all those years that I didn't get to be myself. Mm-hmm. So I started going to the clubs at 16 to wow. gay bars because that was the only way and only place and environment that I felt like I didn't feel like I was judged, that I feel like I wasn't being criticized, and that I could just be myself and let go and be free. And the only way to get into a gay bar, as we all know, is to dress in drag, use a fake ID, and get in. That's what I was doing, and it just went along from there.
So you had a you just had a fake ID. Now, was it your real name and stuff? Was it a different thing, or was it somebody else's identity?
I had so many IDs. Okay. There were
because they kept getting clipped. You're like, this ID's no good anymore.
Yeah, this
McLovin.
I've used IDs of different people before. Mm-hmm. They're real IDs. I just buy off of them, and then they claim it that it's lost. Mm-hmm. And then there are other IDs where I just photocopy it and then just change the year on my ID.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people start drag at such a young age, because like, if you want to get into a bar, it's the fastest way is just slip on a dress and put on some makeup, and they accept you.
It wasn't even for me. It wasn't even about drinking or partying. It was just more about being accepted and
expressing yourself creatively.
Not even that too, but also just expressing myself authentically 100% without judgment.
Mm-hmm. May I ask you what your gender identity is?
Gender fluid, gender neutral. Okay. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Do you have preferred pronouns?
Doesn't matter. He, she, it, shit. Doesn't matter.
Your preferred pronoun, I think one of the queens was saying is, Miss Vanjie.
Are you surprised how that's just kind of taken over the gay world, Miss Vanjie?
You never know. That's the thing with memes and trends and social media is that something so little and so small that you don't expect it to be so trendy, all of a sudden it becomes so trendy because of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of feel like VH1 kind of spoon-fed us that one a little bit.
How?
Well, because, you know, she said it, and then Michelle Visage whispers it into RuPaul's ear, and then on this latest episode of, was it on this latest episode, they refer back to Miss Vanjie. Yeah. So it's like they kind of knew what would catch fire. Because it was such a weird moment.
I thought when she said it, I thought she had a problem remembering her own name and saying it because she was so shocked that she got eliminated, that she was saying, Miss Vanjie. And then I said her saying for the second time, I was like, oh, she fucked up again. And the third time, she still fucked it up. I was like, okay, she's very, very nervous. And she's very, very shook that she got eliminated, that she said her name three times incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. So why the Japanese name? Hamasaki.
Hamasaki comes from the Japanese pop singer Ayumi Hamasaki, and she's like the Madonna of the Asian world. And Hamasaki, when you say it just sounds really cutthroat, fierce. Yuha Hamasaki. You know, and I want to keep that name Yuha Hamasaki as Asian, so that when people hear the name Yuha Hamasaki, they know that it is an Asian drag queen, and that.
What do Chinese people think of Japanese people, or vice versa?
There's been some history behind it, but I think that's past generations. That
it's not like Americans think about the British, or is that different? Like, you know, is that animosity, or do they think like, you know, Japanese people are sophisticated, or, you know, I don't know. That's why I'm kind of curious.
Oh, before there was the war. Yeah, I don't know if you remember it.
Which one?
World War II. World War II. So there was some animosity among the two countries, but I think that's past generations. So for me, it doesn't
so
linger.
To be Asian in this modern world we live in is to be pan-Asian. It's to sort of embrace all the different cultures: Korean, Japanese, Thai, Indonesian, everything. And so and that certainly influences you as a performer.
Yes. So a lot of my costumes, I don't only just wear Chinese. I wear Japanese. I wear Thai. I wear Korean. I wear a bunch of stuff. So, but a lot of times Americans don't realize that they're different. For example, I wear a red kimono for the anxious look for week one, and then somebody said, "Why are you wearing a red kimono again for your premiere red carpet look?" I'm like, "That's from China. That's a Cheng Sam."
Weren't you worried that you're going to have the kimono curse with the Madonna challenge?
No, because I'm actually Asian myself,
and that's just good luck.
Yeah. Exactly.
It had a good quality kimono, I'm sure.
But Asians love things.
Not like something looks like a Victoria's Secret.
Right? Yeah, a lot of them are wearing Victoria's Secret.
Asians love everything that's good luck. Whereas it's like you ask somebody, it's like, why do you have that cat waving at you, that clock?
It's good luck.
It's for good luck. And why is it red?
Why do you have a turtle outside of your house?
Good luck.
It's good luck.
Why do you have a horse sitting outside? Good luck. She brings babies, you know.
What do you do for good luck for yourself as a queen?
Nothing really.
Maybe that's why you got eliminated in the third episode.
Yeah, that is true, I guess. I don't do anything really. I mean,
are you a religious person?
No.
No.
That's why. I'm not religious at all.
Yeah. So you're like action, not faith.
Yeah, I believe it. If you want something, go for it. You know, your life is in your own hands. It's in your own hands. Make the most out of it. That's what I believe in.
And your family originally moved to Brooklyn, but then you guys moved to Chinatown.
Chinatown,
and,
yes.
And so a lot of drag queens that I know, they go to Chinatown to shop for their drag. But you just
what do they buy?
Anything they can, because there's all sorts of like really great costumes and, you know, tchotchkes.
Fans, especially.
Fans.
Jams.
Yeah, everybody's like, that's where that's where I got my first fan.
Yeah, yeah,
for the
fans
Asian
especially.
Stores in Chicago, you know.
And kimonos for season 8, you know.
And you're a big admirer of Laverne Cox, who got her start at Lucky Chang's.
Yes.
Yeah. What's your, do you guys know each other? Or?
Yes, we do, actually. She worked there until 2012, until Orange is the New Black came out. And she's like, bye, I'm going to go.
Like, see you later,
I'm going to be a big superstar, and you know.
I'm going to be a star.
Yeah, so we...
And then you never heard from her again.
I saw her at a diner.
And she's like, I'm sorry, who are you?
No, she remembers me. She remembers me. She said, at a diner maybe 3 years ago, she said, hey... And that was it.
Do you want my autograph?
Hey.
But it's really fascinating the times we live in, because it's like before Laverne Cox, there really wasn't a lot of public figures in entertainment that were trans.
There was Candace Kane. That was about it.
Yeah.
You know?
And now we just have so many people. And I think Laverne was kind of very instrumental at opening those doors.
Yes, exactly. I think she was also the first colored trans woman to be on the cover of Time Out.
Time Out and... Time Magazine.
And Time Magazine. Yeah.
You know, from Time Out to Time, honey. Yeah. Now, you've been eliminated. And so I'm sure a lot of your friends are like, what are you going to do with the $100,000? But this year, you're going to be making at least $100,000. What are you going to do with that money? What is some of your dreams that you're going to pursue? Like,
save it. Invest in it and put it back in my drag. I'm not going to... spend it lavishly and stupidly.
Well, you put it into their new video, the Ankh song.
Yes.
Featuring DJ Mitch Farino.
Yes, yes, yes. He was also the one that did Bob's Purse First.
Awesome.
That's why you did Ankh first in the video.
Yes, yes, yes. So I won't get sued for it. So if he wants to sue me, I'm like, girl, you're a part of this production too. You know?
Where'd you find all those children? The premise for people who haven't seen the video is you're kind of like wrapped up in your caution tape. Ankh dress.
It was the video, the whole video itself, it was just a spoof. It was just a
old MacDonald had a farm.
Yeah, and also the fact that I'm trying to brainwash people to wear an Ankh. But the thing is, this is just a fun mini project. I'm not trying to be Beyonce or anything with this project, you know what I mean? Just for fun.
Where'd you get these kids?
Oh, the kids, we had a production company that sets up everything, and they found the kids.
So you imagine that the parents are coming in.
The parents are there, too.
Yeah, and they're like, honey, just pretend like you're into this drag queen.
Yes, they did.
Did they have to explain what was going on?
No, the kids were very, very smart, actually. Okay. They were very smart, very intelligent, and very quick, too. Oh. I would say very open-minded as well, you know.
Who was the kid who you felt like was a born star?
They were all amazing.
They were all really good.
You know, there was one part where I pushed the girl and she pushed me back. I thought that was very funny. You know. Just
I always like it when drag queens get to work with children. You know? I think of like Jinx Monsoon in that video.
Creep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then she has a bunch of little schoolgirls and they're all like. giving her the, like, they're like other drag queens on Drag
Doesn't
Race.
Doesn't she mow them down or something or blow them up at the end?
I think she kills them all. Yeah. It's like she kills children. I was like, what a wholesome video.
Because I think what happens when you put drag queens and children is that it shows diversity, how children are so open and accepting to someone that's so different from them, even though society and the media tells them that it is not okay. But I think that what makes it so good to see.
But kids like drag queens can be really mean.
What do you mean?
Oh, kids, it's like, you know, a lot of people describe their high school years or their elementary school years as prison. You know, it's like, and drag, certainly we watch RuPaul's Drag Race, and you guys are, you know, like, girls.
It's like you guys are in prison.
We're going to have to put a restraining order between the Vixen and Aquaria. I mean, shoot.
Yeah.
Now, you were there when it all went down.
I was not. I was being judged on the main stage with other girls that were in the tops and the bottoms. Mm-hmm. So while that was happening, I was not there.
Were you aware of the tension, the friction between
there were tensions between the first and second week, but I didn't know how much it escalated on the third week, because once I got back from being judged on the main stage, I went back to the Untucked Lounge, and then I just started going through the lyrics and movements and dance moves of what I need to prepare to lip sync for my life, because I don't want to worry about them, what fight they're having. They can kill themselves for each for all I care, slap each other for all I care. I'm worried about myself at that point.
Because, well, you were there for the initial fight, though, before the spider arrived.
I was doing my makeup.
Yeah, but you weren't really paying attention to what was happening.
No, half the room were on this side. The other half was the other side, so I don't know what was going on.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people are just like, you know, they're coming for the Vixen or they're supporting her in that kind of sense. So it's interesting to see who's supporting her and who's like really being like, she's a total bitch.
Mm-hmm. And we should probably do a whole podcast about what the issues that the Vixen has brought up, because they really deserve a long discussion about it.
A lot of people are like,
because we did the Cooking with Drag Queens with the Vixen, right? And people are like, what do you guys have to say about it? Because Vixen gave us a lot of friction on the show. And she
hadn't previously, which was really strange. Like there was
in real life,
shift.
Or
in real life, in real life. Vixen was a very close friend of ours, and we know Vixen very well. We filmed in her home, and we followed Vixen around for months with a video camera. And I was disappointed the way she behaved on the cooking part. She was very combative, and that
was the only part that she was combative about. It was the weird. It was so weird to us. It was hard for me to understand. Like when we cooked in the kitchen, because, you know, when we do cooking with drag queens, it's, you know, we follow them around to the clubs, we videotape them, we do a talking head, we interview them. She'd been on the podcast like 7 times, you know? And then when it came to the cooking part, she was just like, I'm going to be a bitch. And we're like, please don't be a bitch. That's not what we're about. And she's like, no, I'm going to be a bitch. And so our editor did the best she could and, you know,
To tone that down.
But it still came through, and I it's disappointing to me, but, you know, she has battles that she's fighting that I will never understand.
And, you know, we love the Vixen, and we're very proud of her standing up for herself and calling out the racist optics that the show in a way that actually gets brought up on the air. And she's also a muckraker. She's someone who jumps into a fight just for the sake of getting attention. So for us in Chicago in the scene who have been in a situation where she was unkind to us, or we got into a legitimate quarrel with her, we feel at this time, some people, that she's crying wolf. But the problem with crying wolf is the real wolf sometimes shows up. And the wolf of racism is real, and we have to forgive Vixen and understand where she's coming at, because ultimately we want to fight to get people to vote. We want to fight to make the world a better place. And with, you know, all this enough movement, the Parkland school shooting movement, is great, but if you look at the statistics, the analytics of young people who watch RuPaul's Drag Race, who are involved in these movements, they're not going out to vote.
Yeah.
And it's a big problem that we have. You know, we're very politically conscious as a young generation, but at the same time, we're not
doing anything to make the difference. We sit at home and complain and say, I'm not going to do it because somebody else is going to do it. But the thing is, if you don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. Like I said, your life is in your own hands.
And what do you have to say about, like, because you watched the episode and you've seen Untucked. What was your reaction to seeing the Vixen and Aquaria's discussion?
To be honest again, my mind wasn't even there, because I know I was going to be eliminated Yeah. That episode. So the entire time I watched it at Roscoe's with Dusty, Ray Bottoms, and Trinica Rex, I was sitting in the middle the entire time. I was just staring at the screen, but I was just thinking in my head, how are they going to show me getting eliminated?
You know
what I mean? How are they going to eliminate
me? How do you feel your elimination went? Do you feel like it was, do you feel okay?
I feel fine. Yeah. I feel fine. It was just,
were you surprised by anything that you saw on the screen?
No, because I know what I did. Mm-hmm. I know what I said. I know what was said to me. So it wasn't a surprise. I remembered it. So it wasn't a surprise. I was just wondering how it's going to look on screen in person, watching from a third person's point of view. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Watching myself.
Mm. And so what do you feel like was the, Brandon Branton wants to know, what was your most challenging moment between filming an episode and when it finally airs?
It's, the challenge is, before announcement was keeping a secret, because everybody's asking, are you on? Are you on? Are you on? Are you on? Are you onk? Yes. Are you on? Are you on? Are you on? Are you on? And you can't say anything.
Yeah.
And after the announcement, each episode, the hard part, the difficult part was sleep, I would say.
Oh, just sleep. Winding down for the end of the day. Because you're filming throughout the day, and then at the end of the day, they have you comment on what took place that day. And that's and they have you wear the same outfits to have consistency. We can't talk about that.
Yeah. Can't talk about it.
Sorry.
But you're up early in the morning.
Yes, we're up. We have long days.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have long days. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of hard work, but it's very rewarding at the same time, you know?
One thing that a lot of the contestants, I guess, got into trouble for talking about in the past seasons were that they would get checkout notices in their hotel rooms. And they stopped doing that.
After season 4, I think they caught on.
What happened?
They would tell them they're going home before they sent them home.
They would get from the hotel they were staying at, they'd get a little note saying, here's your checkout date and all this stuff. And they'd be like, why am I getting this checkout date?
Yeah, exactly.
And then they go home.
Exactly. I've heard that. I've heard those stories.
I think Mimi I'm First is the one who kind of just...
She spilled the beans on that.
She spilled the beans out there. And then other people chimed in and be like, yeah, that's true.
But were you surprised when you got eliminated? Do you feel like it was an unexpected departure for you?
I think everybody can say that they don't expect themselves to go home so early or going home at all, you know, but you never know what they're looking for because it is a TV show produced by a group of people, not by the whole of America, you know.
And you certainly had a Snatch Game character ready to go.
Yes.
What was it going to be?
I had several, actually. I had Jackie Chan on mine.
Of course.
Jackie Chan, Christina Aguilera, and also Lois Griffin from Family Guy. Hi, Pina.
Well, you can't do cartoon characters.
Yeah, I think you can't. You have to do real people.
You have to do real people.
But we had to bring in several options.
Yeah.
So, those were my options.
But
you could do real people even though they, like, play a character, right?
So
you could just do, like, you know...
The person that narrates...
The person, and then, like Maggie Smith, like, one Ben did Maggie Smith, he did it as the, you know, as the Duchess, or the Dowager... Countess? What was she called? Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Dusty Ray Bottoms, you're touring with her. You're here in Chicago
with
Roscoe's.
Her. Yes.
And Dusty Ray Bottoms had a really, like, tough time with her family. They tried to take her into an exorcist.
Yes, she told me that for the first time ever 2 years ago. We worked at a bar called Pieces in New York City, and she told me that in the dressing room, and I was shocked when she was telling me that story because I didn't know how severe... Some people take it that they would have an exorcist come to their own home, to their child, and have them open their mouth and perform.
Open their mouth?
Open her mouth, like, to take
the demons out.
Demon and evil out of her, which was the gay stuff.
Because the demons go in through your holes. Any of your holes.
Many holes.
Just don't keep those holes.
Shit.
That's why your anus slaps shut after you're done pooping so that the demons don't go in there.
Is that really what the religious...
They just made that up.
Is that true? Is that a thing that people believe?
That's why God designed the anus to close and your mouth to close so demons don't go in there.
Oh, wow.
But I eat a lot.
Christopher Michael Ramos says, do you believe, like other queens have stated, that Rue and the producers look through all of your drag and decide if you're worth keeping?
Hi, Christopher. Say that question again.
Do you believe, like other queens have stated, that RuPaul and the producers look through all your drag and decide if you're worth keeping?
What do you mean, look through while
they
we're not there?
They look through your outfits and be like, will this be good for episode 5? Will this be good for episode 6? Will this be good for episode 7?
I don't know. I don't think they have the time for that.
Yeah.
Because once we all leave at the same time, we all arrive at the same time.
Yeah.
So I don't think they have the time for that unless...
While you're sleeping, they're going through your stuff.
Unless we leave and then they come back in, I don't think, because they shut the gate and everything, you know.
And so your time in the hotel room is very much time to decompress, but you're just like so caught up in what happened and how you're thinking and how this is going to affect your life. That's really hard to just get a good night's sleep.
Not even that. I'm not even thinking about my life, actually, when I'm back at the hotel room. I'm thinking about, oh, my God. I just had a very long day. All right, how do I prepare for tomorrow? That's what I'm thinking about, which is something that I should not do, knowing if I knew that was going to happen, I should just go back to the hotel room, forget everything, get a good night's sleep, and worry about it tomorrow. That's how I should have done it.
Well, so that seems to be a common trope with a lot of drag queens, is that they try to be a Jacqueline of all trades. They try to put everything in the kitchen sink into their costumes and their performances. And a lot of common criticisms that the judges I've seen tell them to do is, which is a similar thing that a fashion person says. I think it was when you're done with your look, take one thing off and then you're done. Who was that, Mark? Was that Anna Wintour who said
it was the guy from Chanel,
wasn't it?
Coco Chanel.
Yeah,
yes.
Chanel.
And it feels like, you know, editing is a skill that would benefit a lot of drag queens.
Because we try to be perfectionists, you know what I mean? We try to do this. We try to do the most. When we're in drag, we try to do the most. Because you want to be as standout as possible. You want to be as dramatic as possible. So with that mentality in mind, you're trying to do the most without even thinking about editing. I think that's the problem where it lays.
And so that, like, I think about like a show like Mimi I'm First one time I saw that she did, where she just had, it looked like a yard sale on the stage.
What was she doing?
She just would travel like with 6 or 7 suitcases.
And she had them all on the stage?
And she just had tons of props.
Props.
And to me, I was like, a part of me, I was really fascinated by it, because she literally, like, if she, you know, had a scene where she's drinking a cocktail, she would have a cocktail, and she had a burger, and she had a kitchen sink, and she had a fan, and she had puppets, and she had
bowling pins.
And
did it work out
chicken.
Well?
I think it was an interesting performance, and certainly, like, you know, in the early 90s, it was very similar to a lot of artists. Either they went completely naked, they took all their clothes off, and so there was them naked in front of an audience telling their life story. Like, I think about Tim Miller, Holly Hughes, or it was like a polar opposite, which a lot of drag queens were doing, and they would just bring everything in the kitchen sink onto the stage with them. And so it's always difficult to strike that balance as an artist, is like, how much do you actually bring into your act, you know, versus like just having faith that we're going to enjoy the show just because we love you.
Yeah.
And you don't need to, you know, some people just discover, like, I think Milan discovered this. It's like, you know, maybe drag isn't necessarily the path that I want to take. I just want to be a musician. I want to be a performer.
Yeah, and she's doing fabulous right now.
How do you see yourself, like, going in this direction so far? Like, do you feel like you're going to get more elaborate, or you're going to simplify, or how is this going to
elaborate my drag, or do you mean my artistry?
Yeah, like, do you feel like you're having a tendency to, you know, make things more elaborate, like do, you know, multimedia performances? Like, I'm thinking about Todrick Hall. Like, he brings everybody in town into his videos, and it turns into a multimedia spectacle. And then there's other artists who...
Like Sia.
Sia, yeah, who's just literally standing on stage, not moving, one single camera, one single shot.
Depends what I'm doing, I would say. If it's I thought you were trying to tell me something.
No. Oh, Mark wanted to ask a question?
I'm going
to
ask, well, when you're done.
Okay. It depends what you're doing, I think. I'm not a singer. I'm not a dancer. I'm not. So I'm going to need those backup dancers to dance for me. So
that's child actors.
Yeah, I will need child actors. You know what I mean? So that's where it lays.
You got to get some fake IDs for those child actors and get them into this bar gig soon.
Yeah.
Dara Hughes says, love from Ireland.
Hi, how are you?
And he says, how did you feel about the Bianca Del Rio makeup comparisons that started once the cast was revealed?
Every year when the girls, the new cast of girls are announced, our promo shots go out, everybody starts comparing your makeup, your look, your face, your aesthetic to previous Drag Race contestants. And if you actually look at our makeup, me and Bianca's, we wear big lashes, yes, but our lashes are actually very different. Our makeup are very different. The way that we draw our eyebrows and the way we contour our face, it's very different, actually. It's just the fact that we have big lashes and we smile in our photos, people think we look the same. You know what I mean? I even get compared to Gia Gunn.
Absolutely.
Kimchi. Jiggly Caliente, Manila Luzon Angina. You know what I mean?
So anybody who's Asian is going to be in this category.
Yeah, I was getting to that point.
But
yeah,
I get compared to Manila Luzon, too.
How?
People saw me on drag, and they're like, you look just like Manila Luzon. I'm like, you really?
You know, you see, that's the thing. People compare you to people that they know. That they know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, when
drag queen who they see first thinks yes. invented it.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, honey, I've been in drag for 20 years.
I'm yes. Or when Nicki Minaj came out, you're like, oh my God, you look and your music sounds like Trina, you know what I mean? Or Lil' Kim. Or they just, people always compare.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's, there's something about being compared, like nobody, even when it's comparison to somebody who's really great, you still kind of resent it a little bit because everybody wants to be unique and appreciated for their own talents. So like to drag queens, it's like, it's kind of like one of the rudest thing you could do is compare them.
Sure, compare me to Bianca all you want. Just pay me her booking fee, you know. I get paid $1.
Bianca Bucks, honey. Yeah. Trademark.
Yes, girl. Yes.
You have a lot of merch now.
Yes.
And right now, I don't know if you guys can see it in the video, but like Cooking with Drag Queens merch is sitting on the floor of the living room right
yes.
there.
And I have to go to work after and help them unpack.
thank you for your efforts.
How are you managing all this? Because every drag queen does it differently. I know that like Bob the Drag Queen just kept his old apartment and uses it as a storage locker. What about you? Like,
I use my apartment
as a storage locker, but you're living in it too.
But I'm living at the same time too. But it's pretty decent size, I would say. I mean, at this point, I'm just sleeping there. I mean, I'm barely even home. You know what I mean? So I'm just sleeping there. So my merch is over there. I just whenever somebody puts an order, I shove it in the envelope myself. I lick the envelope myself. I handwrite the envelope myself. I do everything myself. Yes, I tell them if you want my saliva, you want to clone me, order my merch.
And they can kind of kiss you by kissing the envelope.
Exactly. They have to kiss and lick the envelope again.
Sure. I want to do this one. Brian Sweeney wants to know.
Hi, Brian.
Who would you want to have most sex with, Mark or Fausto? He asked this question just to start a fight.
Do you guys know this guy?
Yeah, we are. Okay. He's a guest on our show.
Can I pick both? Is it okay? I'm very single. I'm very, very single.
Ryan also put himself into the mix.
I'm very single. I'm desperate. I'm horny.
You want to have Brian. He's one of the funnier and more appealing of people who does this show on a regular basis.
he's also straight, so you have to do full on fish.
Is he
him.
Is he really straight?
Yeah. He's
Can
real
I see
straight.
A picture of him?
Yeah.
He's a straight brother.
Mark, are you pull out your phone.
Kyle Coffrin says, hey, what is some advice you have for brand new baby queens that are trying to bust into the scene? I'm doing my third show tonight in St. Louis, quenching everyone's thirst.
What's her name?
Her name is Kyle Coffrin.
Hi, Kyle. Just be yourself, honestly. Just be yourself. It is so easy. I mean, you hear all the time, just be yourself. Because it's easy, it's comfortable. You know yourself the best. Nobody else does but you. Just be yourself. Whatever your talent and strengths are, just do it. Because someone else might be a good dancer and you try to dance like them and you're not a dancer, it's not going to work. You know, just find your own strengths and go from there.
That's
Brian Sweeney. So.
Oh, he's cute.
Yeah.
Where is
he's
he?
A tall like Irish guy.
What is it?
Do you like diabetics? Do you like pumping guys full of insulin?
one time works.
Christopher Ramos.
Hi, Christopher.
I would love to see you on Cooking with Drag Queens.
But apparently they're going to teach me how to cook.
What's like your favorite food to reheat?
Water. I boil water. I order takeout, so...
What's like your comfort food?
Thai food, I would say, because if you try to reheat a burger or fries or onion rings, it doesn't taste the same. Mm. But if it's Thai food or Chinese food, if you reheat it, it'll still taste the same.
There's a huge controversy with Chinese food, especially Chinese Americans, that they feel like stuff like Panda Express is a bastardization of their culture. And they're very offended that most Americans, when they think of Chinese food, they feel is very unauthentic. And a lot of Mexicans have this same feeling about Tex-Mex cuisine.
Or Chipotle, right?
Yeah, Chipotle, yeah.
I don't have any feelings for it, actually, because I don't eat it.
You think it's? Do you like Panda Express? Have you eaten that?
I tried it before. I didn't like it.
Orange chicken is not. We just ate there yesterday.
I love Panda Express. Well, what's something your mother would try and get you to eat as a little kid that you were just like, I am not eating that?
Everything. Yeah. You know, we grew up eating everything. Like, I mean, you think. I mean,
lizards, snakes.
Snakes, yes. Frogs, chicken feet. Yes. Chicken feet, yes. Turtles, yes. What else?
What does a turtle taste like?
Like meat. Meat. Which is why I don't eat meat anymore because I grew up watching those animals get killed while growing up because while we were in China, she was just slaughtering them, me and my dad.
Have you seen those videos where they have the octopus and they pour the soy sauce and the octopus goes rah, crazy?
But I can imagine. I've seen some with squids.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm like, I guess it's a reaction to the salt in the
because they're already dead.
They're already dead. They're just muscles are reacting mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah, it's burning sensation.
And I'm like, oh my Jesus.
God, that sounds like STD.
I know. So your comfort food is like, if you're gonna, is pad Thai or is it you're a Piper King or do you like
anything Thai?
Yeah. Yeah, so you're a Thai at heart.
Yeah, I like Korean food too, but it's so expensive, Korean food.
Really?
You don't think so?
No.
Well, you're bougie, so.
No. We there is a Korean barbecue near our place that's open late, and when we go there, as soon as we're done, we're like, "Damn, that was expensive."
Yeah, Korean food is expensive.
You know, whereas like I'm all about cooking at home. You know, and certainly like Asian food, I think, and a lot of people don't realize is that there's so much history in Asian food, especially like if you just look at the history of soy sauce, for example. That it's taking, you know, thousands and thousands of years to develop this one ingredient. And there's just a wisdom of time that is put into every recipe that, you know, some of the most sophisticated, some most complex flavors that we get in the world come from Asian countries.
Exactly. Soy sauce used to be a delicacy. Now you can buy in the store for $1 or $2, but before only rich people had access.
I throw
soy
bags
sauce.
Of it out because I'm just like, this soy sauce is sitting in my
I know.
One of the controversial things with vegetarians is fish sauce and Thai food. How do you feel about that?
I still eat it.
So you're mostly vegetarian then?
I'm pescatarian.
Pescatarian.
Pescatarian. I'll eat fish. I'll eat seafood. I'll have shrimp. I'll
sushi?
Yes. Love sushi. Yeah.
We've been getting into rolling our own sushi.
What'd you say?
We've been getting into eating our own sushi at home.
Yeah.
Salmon. We just buy the salmon and we slice it and make it at home. And it's actually like, for what you would spend like $80 or $100, you spend like $20.
For like three pieces, right?
Yeah.
For like three freaking pieces.
And we eat like kings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Making sushi at home is one of the best things. I really want to get you back into the kitchen.
I would love to.
You see that? That's the kitchen right behind you. I know it doesn't look much when you're like streaming on an iPhone, but we make it look good.
Mickey Allen Hampton asked,
"Hi, Mickey."
Manila got a lot of flack from the girls on her season when she used a stereotypical accent for a challenge. Would you find it offensive, or would you do the same for a challenge?
I don't find it offensive because she's Asian herself. Mm-hmm. It's not like she's another race and she's making fun of the Asian culture. If she's Asian, do it. Mm-hmm. Don't let other people decide for you what's racist for you when they're not your race. Mm-hmm.
Brandon Ballone, also known as Jezebella.
Hi, Jezebella. I know that bitch. Yeah, she's
from New York.
Yeah.
From season 10, did any of the queens hit you up to make them costumes before filming?
Yes.
Because you're a good sewer.
Yes.
Because for years, you've been making costumes for girls
in
New York City.
Yes. Monet Exchange had to fix some of her stuff. I had to fix before going into filming. Cracker, she asked me. I told her, sorry, I'm swamped with other projects I cannot finish.
And did she give you that look like you got on too?
No, she didn't know. She did not know until she walked in.
Okay.
Dusty Ray Bottoms, I was making stuff for her, but I didn't tell her. I didn't tell anybody. Nobody knew until I walked in the room and they were like,
oh, when you were making stuff, you were like, I bet this is for Drag Race. And you're like, let me fuck this up real bad.
I did not actually. I was a fair competitor and I knew they were on. They were just not telling me because.
Yeah, you can tell.
I know the stuff that we were supposed to bring and they were exactly having me fix or make stuff for them that were exactly the same list that I got.
You had a really good excuse. You said you were in a coma.
Yeah, I did. It was a play off of because you're not supposed to tell anybody that you're leaving for production. So it wasn't until I was on the plane, I was flying to LA, I sent a text to all my employers and said, hi, my grandpa died. I'm going back to China now. I'm sorry. So when I came back, people were like, oh, she was filming this and this and that. She wasn't even in China. So let me play off of the fact that I was in China. Okay, fine. I was in China because I got into a coma. So that's where I came out.
Really? Did anyone believe you were in a coma?
People that don't watch Drag Race and don't understand that Drag Race is filmed around that time, yes. They believed it and they sent me messages and said, are you okay? Are you fine? How are you? What happened? Everything okay? Mm-hmm. But people that watch the show and it's a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, they know what's going on. They just laugh about it.
Yeah. It's like you should have just told people you're visiting your grandma in Korea like Kimchi did.
Oh, God.
Sasha Kills, who's a Parisian drag queen.
Hi, Sasha.
Writes, how do you feel about the lack of drag queens of Asian descent on the scene? Do you think there's a particular reason for this? And are there any Asian drag queens you want to give a shout out to?
Okay, that was a lot of questions. Yeah. Break it down for me. Sorry.
How do you feel about there not being that many Asian drag queens, and why do you think that might be? Or do you feel like there's a lack of Asian drag queens?
Yes, I think there is a lack of Asian drag queens because doing drag, not everybody just wakes up and say, I'm going to do drag. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of balls, I think, to do drag, to wear a pair of heels, makeup and walk out on the street, I think. Walking off, being of a different gender and representing that. So I think in Asian culture, we're taught to be obedient, that we don't have the opportunity to be a rebel and break out of our shell. And I think that's why
it's coming from inside their own community as much as outside.
You're putting in a better word than I am. Yes, I think that's what's going on.
And so it's part of that, like, because your family's so important to you, there's a lot of expectations placed upon you.
Yes.
And being a drag queen is all about sort of breaking that mold.
Yes, and also even being gay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the first step. And then you have to become a drag queen. That's double elimination.
Sashay away for both those reasons.
Yeah.
Do you feel like at some point in time you're going to sit your family down and say, Mom, Dad, I'm a beautiful woman.
And I'm on RuPaul's Drag Race season 10.
Do they know you're on TV?
No. My sister knows.
Yeah.
My sister knows. Yeah. Will I ever sit them down? I don't know.
Yeah.
Depends if the time is right, because everybody's journey is different. Everybody's family handled it differently.
Do you think your sister might tell them?
I don't think so. No. I mean, she's known for years. She hasn't said a word.
Maybe rephrase the question. Do you think your parents want to know?
I don't think they want to know. That's why I'm not telling them. I would rather not have them know than let them know and be sad about it.
And just keep peace in your home, you know, too. It's like,
and have peace and harmony and goodwill and bring honor.
And luck.
Yes. And waving cats.
So tonight in Chicago, for people that are watching this on the live feed, you're performing at Roscoe's.
Yes, I am.
Are you with some of the other girls?
Yes, I am. You? It's me and Dusty Ray Bottoms.
Awesome.
Yeah, my sister from New York City, Dusty Ray Bottoms.
You guys going to do an exorcist on stage?
Exorcism? Yes. We joked yesterday.
Bring the gay back in.
Yes, we joked yesterday. She said she learned how to do a death drop not too long ago, and she passed out for 20 minutes, and people were saying, do a death drop. She said, come tomorrow to Roscoe's and see me do that drop during my performance. And I said, I'll make sure she passes out for 20 minutes. I'll hit her in the head. I'll put her in a coma too.
Did she actually hit her head?
That's what she said. That's what she said. She passed out for 20 minutes.
Wow.
These death drops are so dangerous. Shangela broke her knee.
Yeah.
Can you do a death drop?
No.
After we're done, we'll teach
you. You can teach me, yeah. Okay. You better teach me live on video so people know that's actually you.
We can do it right now.
Do you really know how to do it?
Yeah. I mean, kind of.
we're gonna show that. You want to show that right now?
Why not?
Okay. Okay, guys. We want to thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. Let's end the podcast and then we'll do the death drop. And this is you can watch the death drop tutorial. Mark shows you Yuhua.
Still learning.
How to do it.
Don't worry, RuPaul doesn't know my name either.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to have fabulous guests like Yuhua if it weren't for you. there.
You.
Exactly, honey.
Remember, we have a fantastic t-shirts and one shirt that you can get. Glittery t-shirts of Cooking with Drag Queens, Feast of Fun, and my favorite, I'm Not an Evil Queen, I Just Got a Bad Edit. Available on our store, feastoffun.com/store.